Hi, this is Melanie Ann Phillips, co-creator of the Dramatica Theory and Software, and welcome to Dramatica Character Basics. In this program, you'll get a complete overview of Dramatica's new way of looking at characters. But more than that, you'll learn scores of tips for creating characters, developing characters, and bringing them together in powerful dramatic interactions. Using what you learn in this program, you'll be able to make your characters come alive at the same time they fulfill sound dramatic functions. Before we begin, though, a word about the Dramatica theory and software. The word Dramatica actually refers to two different things: a new theory of story which has been under development for over 20 years now, and a complete line of software products which implement the theory as tools for story creation and development. The information contained in this program focuses on the Dramatica theory, so you can use what you learn with or without the software. Now, Dramatica is kind of like a unified field theory of story. It ties characters, plot, theme, and genre together so that it can tell you, if you make changes in one area, what kind of dramatic impact you'll have in the other three. As a result, before we get specifically into characters, there are a few underlying foundational concepts which need to be explored to show how characters fit into the bigger picture of your story as a whole. The first of these concepts is called the story mind. The story mind concept is at the heart of the Dramatica theory. It's what sets Dramatica apart from any other theory of story, and it is the seed from which all other Dramatica concepts grow. Technically stated, Dramatica sees every complete story as an analogy to a single human mind trying to deal with an inequity. In more conversational terms, Dramatica says every story should be seen as if it were a single human mind, and that characters, plot, theme, and genre are different families of thought that go on in a single mind, made tangible, so we, the audience, can look into what happens in our own minds when we're trying to make a value judgment decision. Genre represents the story mind's overall personality. Plot represents the methods used by the story mind in trying to arrive at a satisfactory conclusion. Theme illustrates the story mind's conflicting value standards, and characters represent the story mind's basic drives. So, the story mind concept was pretty revolutionary. Previously, all other story theories had seen characters as representing real, complete human beings. But from Dramatica's perspective, each one represents only a facet of a single human mind. In fact, if you have a character in a story who is developed as a complete human mind, there'll be no room for any other characters without overlapping the same dramatic functions. The appeal of stories, the reason behind them, is to allow the audience to look into the mechanism of its own mind and to watch conflicting drives at work. The message of the author is that one particular drive may lead to success and fulfillment, while another kind of drive will lead to failure and disappointment. As an audience, then, we get a point of view on the story mind that we can't get on our own mind, and that is from the outside looking in. This point of view is kind of like a general on a hill, looking down at a battle happening in the valley below. As an audience, we look into the story and watch the dramatic battle take place among the characters. From this far outside the story, however, we can't identify the characters as individuals any more than a general could identify the specific soldiers by name. Rather, we see them by their dramatic function. Just as the general might identify the enemy commander, the guy leading the charge for our side, and his lieutenant, so too we might identify the antagonist of the story, the protagonist, and his sidekick. Because this point of view takes in the big picture, it's referred to in Dramatica as the objective perspective. Through it, the audience can come to understand the most effective kinds of drives by following the characters who exhibit those drives. Still, if that were the only point of view provided in stories, audiences would feel somewhat removed from the characters and not at all involved in the passion of the battle. What if we could zoom the audience down from that hill to actually stand in the shoes of one of the characters and see the story through his or her eyes? Suddenly we have a much more passionate view of what's going on. This is what happens when we see the story through the eyes of a main character. The main character represents the audience position in the story, and through him or her, the audience is able to understand what it's like to be inside the story mind. In our own lives, we don't stand outside looking in. We stand on the inside looking out, and we are the main character in our own minds. We may change or grow in time, but we always have a sense of self that says, this is how things look to us from where we stand right now. So too, in a story, the main character represents where the story mind's sense of self is positioned, and the audience identifies with that sense of self as the passionate or most personal view of the entire dramatic battle. At first thought, it might seem that this main character is simply the hero of the story. But in fact, the main character does not have to be the guy leading the charge. In our own lives, we are often not the prime movers of what goes on around us, but we have some other function more to the sidelines. So too in stories, the main character doesn't have to be the quarterback in the football game, but might be any one of the players, or even the water boy. In fact, a hero is a protagonist who is the main character. But with so many other possible combinations, if you've been writing with nothing but heroes, you've been limiting the kinds of characters you can create. A good example of a story in which the main character is not the protagonist can be found in both the book and movie versions of To Kill a Mockingbird. This story follows a lawyer named Atticus who believes in equality and is trying to defend a black man wrongly accused of raping a white girl in a small southern community in the 1930s. Clearly, Atticus is the protagonist of To Kill a Mockingbird because he drives the plot forward, but he's not the main character. Rather, the story is told through the eyes of his young daughter, Scout, who observes the nature and impact of prejudice and the cost of standing against it with the perspective of a child. By separating the main character from the protagonist, Harper Lee, the author of To Kill a Mockingbird, has given us a more innocent perspective of prejudice, forcing us to strip away the complexities of our adult opinions and get back to the simple human basics. For most authors, the initial tendency is to position the audience at the heart of the action, but Dramatica suggests alternatives. Make a list of all the characters with which you intend to populate your story. And going down the list, one by one, ask yourself, what would my story feel like if told from this perspective? What if this character were the main character? Compare the different feelings. Even though the story remains the same, the action that takes place is identical. The way the story will feel to the audience will be completely different depending on which of the characters you select as your main character. Now, in the end, you may choose to make your protagonist the main character anyway, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But you also might be surprised to discover that another character has a much more interesting angle on the action. By remembering to consider every character as a potential main character, you can breathe new life into pedestrian stories and offer perspectives that are truly useful to your audience they might not have seen anywhere else before. So far, we've explored two different ways of looking at the story mind, from the outside in with the objective view, in which characters are only identified by their dramatic function, and from the inside out, which is the main character's point of view, the audience position in the story. Many authors have discovered these two views on their own, but there is a third one they often forget to include. Going back to our example of a story as a dramatic battle, seen by the objective view of the general on the hill and through the main character's eyes on the field, let's follow the main character as he makes his way through the story. As the main character proceeds, following the course his experience tells him is best, he encounters another soldier standing clearly in his path. But through all the smoke of the dramatic explosions, the main character can't tell if this other soldier is a friend or a foe. The main character shouts to this other soldier, "Get out of my way!" And the other soldier shouts back, "No, you get off the path." Back and forth they argue, main character saying get out of the way, other soldiers saying get out of the path. Eventually, the main character will either plow right through that other soldier, or that soldier standing in his path will force the main character to change course. This other soldier is called the obstacle character, and is completely different from the antagonist. The antagonist, like the protagonist, is identified from the objective view by function. It's the antagonist's function to be diametrically opposed to the protagonist in the big picture. But the obstacle character is opposed in philosophy to the main character. They have two different worldviews, two different paradigms which are in conflict, and in the end, one will win out over the other. In traditional story theory, it's fairly easy to confuse the antagonist and the obstacle character, because traditional theories usually deal with heroes and villains. But just as a hero is made up of a protagonist who is also the main character, a villain is made up of an antagonist who is also the obstacle character. Although there's nothing wrong with combining the obstacle character and antagonist to form a villain, just as there's nothing wrong with combining the protagonist and main character to form a hero, if your story has a hero and a villain, then you flatten out two completely different kinds of interaction into one kind of relationship. Hero and villain now have to fulfill two completely different kinds of functions. One is the objective function of being diametrically opposed in the big picture. And at the same time, everything that transpires between these two characters also has to relate to the attempt of one to change the other's belief system as well. Although there's no rule that says you can't do this, if you do, you may find that the audience often becomes confused as to which of the two relationships a single story point pertains. In other words, if you have a story with a hero and a villain, without splitting the protagonist from the main character, or the obstacle character from the antagonist, both of those two relationships are blended together in a single relationship between those characters, confusing the audience and making it difficult for you as author to make sure both of those kinds of relationships are each fully developed. In fact, if you flatten these two different relationships into a single relationship between a hero and a villain, you've established the foundation of a melodrama, because the audience is expected to accept the progression of the relationship between the hero and the villain in both through lines, even if each is only partially developed. Well, we've covered a lot of ground so far, so let's pause for a moment to take stock of what we've learned. First, we discover that the central concept in Dramatica is that it sees every complete story as a single human mind. In this story mind, characters, plot, theme, and genre represent different families of thought that go on in each of our own minds. Characters are the drives of the story mind. Plot, the methods it uses to try to resolve inequities. Theme represents the story mind's conflicting value standards as it tries to work out the best way to look at the issues, and genre describes the story mind's overall personality. Because characters represent the conflicting drives in the story mind, in fact, in any of our minds, each one is not really a complete person. In fact, if you try to make each character complete, you'll really be overlapping dramatic function and leave no room for the others. Each character should represent a specific kind of drive, which is then played out against the other drives to see which one is the best route to resolve the issues of the story. Later, in your storytelling, you'll dress them up more like real people, giving them specific quirks and traits, manners of speaking, clothing, movement, body shape, and size. And in so doing, they will appear to be human, even though dramatically each character represents only a single facet of the overall story mind. Next, we learn that one of the main reasons stories appeal to an audience is that it provides them with a look into the mechanism of their own minds, their own problem-solving process, from a point of view they can't get in real life, from the outside looking in. From this objective view, characters are not identified as individuals, but by their function. And it's here that we see such characters as the protagonist, the antagonist, or the sidekick. This overview is not unlike the perspective of a general standing on a hill watching a battle down below. He can see the different soldiers by their functions, but not identify them by name. But that isn't the only point of view provided by stories to an audience. An audience also needs to feel involved in the story. The view from the outside looking in may provide us with a reasonable explanation of what the best decisions are, but in our own lives that's the view we don't get. Rather, we're on the inside looking out, trying to make sense of everything. And so in stories, we can't just take the view of the general on the hill, but we need to zoom down into the shoes of one of the soldiers and position ourselves inside the story mind the same way we find ourselves positioned in our own minds, with a sense of self, with the notion that this is where we are as we look at the world around us. This soldier on the field of the dramatic battle, who represents the audience position in the story, is by definition the main character, and provides that view from the inside looking out. Now, the main character can be any one of the players on the field. It doesn't have to be the protagonist. It doesn't have to be the guy leading the charge. Again, in our own lives, we're not always the one driving the story forward. Sometimes we're support personnel, sometimes we're off to the sidelines. And those perspectives are valuable as well. So, you can pick any one of the characters in your story as the main character and determine that's where you want the audience to stand. That's the audience position from which to watch the drama unfold. Now, as the main character tries to make his way through all these dramatic explosions, to do his job and to get out alive, he charts a course based on his personal experience. But, as he travels down that path, another soldier appears, standing clearly in his way. But through all the smoke, the main character can't tell whether it's a friend or a foe. And this other soldier says, "Change course." This other soldier is known as the obstacle character. And if he's a friend, he's trying to keep the main character from walking into a minefield. But if he's a foe, he's trying to get the main character to change course so that he'll step into an ambush. Although from the objective view, the audience may be able to determine whether that character is friend or foe, the main character cannot from where he stands on the inside looking out. That's why the main character will have to make a leap of faith, because from his position, from the inside looking out, there's insufficient information to tell him whether he should stick with his experience and plow right through the obstacle character, or take heed of this new information provided by the obstacle character and change course. So we've now established three points of view on the story mind: the objective perspective, the main character's perspective, the obstacle character perspective. It's important to note that we're not looking through the eyes of the obstacle character, but through the eyes of the main character at the obstacle character. Just as in our own minds, we only have one sense of self at a time. This is who we are. And when we consider becoming someone else because of new information we receive, then we look at that position and examine it and try to determine if that's who we want to be or not. But until we might finally embrace that new position, we remain who we are and look at the alternative. In a sense, the main character represents the I position, the me position within ourselves. The obstacle character represents you, who we're looking at. I'm looking at you. And the objective story represents they, who all of these other people are, or other considerations are within our own mind, that we're not considering becoming, but that have an impact on what course we take. But there's still one final point of view remaining to give the audience a complete story mind perspective, and this is known as the subjective story,